Redefining America, Constitution and Leadership 2010. This is Mark Seltzer.
And this is Jessica Piclo.
Hi, Jessica. I'm glad we're going to take a look at the potential Supreme Court nomination today. I thought we'd talk about Elena Kagan, one of the front runners on the short list, it seems like.
Yeah, she certainly seems to be a presumed front runner, and with good reason, I think. There's a lot in her qualifications and in her background that makes her an optimal choice for President Obama, who has proven himself to be nothing if a pragmatic leader, and she strikes me as the most pragmatic choices of those who have been mentioned so far.
One interesting thing is she has already been confirmed and in the job of Solicitor General. She was about a year ago nominated by President Obama. At that point, people were talking about her as a potential Supreme Court nominee.
And I think it's important to talk for a second about what the position of Solicitor General entails. She is essentially the administration's representative before the Supreme Court. So she has experience now arguing before the sitting justices, defending Obama administration policies, Miranda rights, habeas. I mean, Elena Kagan is the face of the administration there.
So she has a little bit of experience, I mean, a year's worth of experience in that sense of federal constitutional law, comes from an academic background. She's a dean of Harvard Law School prior to her government work, and obviously very adept at working with legal and constitutional scholarship.
And while she was dean at Harvard Law School, she really developed a reputation as a consensus builder. She was key in bringing over some key conservative legal scholars to the law school, a position that didn't always win her a lot of popularity, but I think really developed a breadth of legal understanding that is important. So while progressives may have their concerns about a Kagan nomination, I think that those are premature, and I think that we may see her to be a justice much in the likes of David Souter, somebody who does not say a whole lot, but really ends up with judicial decisions that are broad-minded and building consensus.
Yeah, because a consensus builder on the court would be somebody who takes a divided court and finds ways to create opinions that are more popular, you know, a more substantial majority. That might be very good for the court.
I don't see Justice Roberts as that figure. I see him as an ideologue, but I do think that that is a role that is definitely needed within the court. And in particular, I think that as a student of history, President Obama will look to the manner in which Justice Stevens, who this nominee will be replacing, in the manner in which Justice Stevens's nominee came up. He was nominated by President Ford just after President Nixon had resigned, and it was in the wake of the Watergate scandal, and the country was in a severely partisan divide, and the president in that nomination was looking at somebody who could be a civilian and a scholar. And Justice Stevens, by all accounts, has done that. He has, regardless of whether you agree with his decisions or not, always been represented with the utmost civility and professionalism, which we don't always see in some of the current sitting justices.
Yeah. I mean, it is a really interesting political process, right? The president will select, the Senate needs to confirm a justice, and then that justice is in office for a life term. And many justices have opposed the will or the political views of the person that nominated them, because once they're on the court, they have complete freedom. They have their own mind. They cannot be taken off the court. They cannot be punished for their views. It is a truly independent position, and that's part of what's great about the structure of our government and the constitutional separation of powers. But, you know, there are concerns being expressed by people on both sides about their political goals and whether whoever is nominated will meet those political goals. You mentioned that Kagan is a consensus builder, and certainly that puts her in Obama's camp, regardless of whether you consider Obama to be too conservative or too liberal for one's views. He is that kind of a politician, even though, of course, this has been a very controversial and very partisan year.
Yeah, you know, we don't have a lot of public statements of Kagan's to go on, but as a progressive, I don't have a whole lot of qualms about a Kagan nominee. Of course, I would love to see somebody who is politically in line with absolutely all of my values, but that's not really the role of the court. And I am okay with somebody who is willing to be thoughtful and come to reasoned and deliberate decisions exactly like Justice Stevens did. I didn't always agree with all of the decisions that Justice Stevens came up with on some of his speech cases, for example, but that doesn't mean that I didn't find him an inspirational, progressive voice in the court.
One of the things she did do as dean of Harvard was to object to the recruiting by the ROTC, by the military, on Harvard's campus on the grounds that the military was discriminating against gay and lesbian students. And she made a very clear statement that it was personally repugnant to her, but also it was against the policies that were appropriate for Harvard. And so she made a very clear statement. Some people pointed out, looked into that a little bit, and there were people objecting to how much she infused her personal opinion into the statement of Harvard policy. But nonetheless, she didn't hesitate there to speak in a direction that, you know, some would call progressive, and at least to take a clear political stance.
I think that that's a great example of the kind of thoughtfulness we could expect to see if Kagan were the nominee and if she were ultimately confirmed. And I think it's worth mentioning also that Senator Lindsey Graham has come out early and said that Elena Kagan is exactly the kind of nominee that as a Republican he can get behind, because she does not seem to be an overtly ideological lawyer or scholar, that there is a thoughtfulness. And again, we come back to this theme of consensus, this willingness to fully examine an issue from all sides and not be driven by a particular ideology. Some of the more recent nominations during the Bush term have left a bad taste in the public's mouth on both the right and the left, regardless of whether or not you happen to be a Justice Alito fan or not. I think it's hard to argue that he's not very ideological in his approach. We saw that as he and President Obama sparred in the State of the Union.
Yeah. You know, what's so ironic about that is that Justice Sotomayor, during her nomination, there were all of these claims that she was biased, which is a form of ideological rigidity or something. Really, her judicial philosophy was the opposite, was anything but. You know, she's known as a very pragmatic, detailed, exceptionally hardworking, exceptionally focused on the law, justice, rather than bringing in outside ideology. She would be one of the few justices not coming from the court. And that also, even though, of course, she's been in the, you know, academia and esteemed positions within the law, it is maybe a little bit more of a practical day-to-day life experience.
I think that it is fantastic that we have judicial nominees who are not lifetime judges. I think that need for practical experience speaks to the dynamic nature of the law, and the decisions have real impact. The judiciary sometimes forgets that because they exist in the realm of theory all the time.
If Kagan is nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate, she would be the third woman justice and the first time in the court's history that there were three out of the nine justices that were women. I am hesitant to say that it should be a woman. I'm hesitant to say that we want to have a quota. And yet there is something about this opportunity to bring women who are, you know, 50% more or less of the population onto the court in a representative capacity.
Well, I agree with you that we don't want to have a quota so that we only have our two women positions. I don't think that that's helpful, but I think the idea of breaking through that is fantastic. I never much liked her when she was on the court, but Sandra Day O'Connor continues to impress me off the court, and she has come out in strong support of this, in large part because if you look at law school admissions right now, women make up nearly 60% of the current law school attendees and are representative in equal numbers up to a certain point in private practice. And that's a whole nother question in terms of dropping off the radar there. So it gets us closer to being able to get away from the question of whether or not this is a nominee that is based on a particular identity politics.
And of course, there are going to be other people, whether they are sitting circuit court judges that have, you know, prove themselves and are considered very high caliber candidates also. So it's not just that there is any one person that could only be the candidate for the job. Some of the people who have worked with her and spoken for Elena Kagan, come from both sides of the political spectrum, and they remarked on her intellect. One of the particulars that has been objected to by some on the left is that she has spoken for presidential authority.
I think if she becomes the nominee, we will see a lot of compare and contrast with the failed nomination of Don Johnson as head of the Office of Legal Counsel. Because Don Johnson came out so strongly against the policies of the Bush administration on executive authority and made no qualms that she thought laws were broken. And as a result, inevitably her nomination was withdrawn, as opposed to Kagan, who has supported the Obama administration, who in large part has accepted those executive authority positions and carried them forward.
And that's bound to really upset people who feel, you know, that the spirit and law was violated in the Bush administration. I think maybe a more middle-of-the-road position would be that the Bush administration in the earliest years, both in the wiretapping and in the harsh treatment of prisoners, took positions which it later backed away from. Or, of course, between Congress and the Supreme Court, there were certain restrictions that were placed on the authority of the Bush administration, both in terms of using military tribunals and the wiretap program being more limited and even, I think, eventually found to have violated the Constitution. So those things limited the stance of the Bush administration by its later years. So when the Obama administration picked up with the responsibility and in some ways continued Bush administration policies, which they are often accused of doing by liberals, they are not the positions that were the most outrageous and that most offended people.
There is an institutional inertia in the Department of Justice that will just take time to change. So when you have cases that are already in the judicial pipeline, you are not going to, no matter how radically different your administrations are, you are not going to file a brief suddenly in opposition to a legal position that you have been holding for, you know, the past 4 years. That's just, it's not realistic. So I personally am withholding judgment on the Department of Justice on some of those issues until the administration comes to a close and we can see, based on the totality of the policy, where it came from. And I do think you're right that the courts have, to a large degree, limited some of those policies. But I do think that there are others, like the use of national security letters and whatnot, that go on that are troublesome. But that's a different topic for a different day.
You know, the other thing, just to mention a couple of facts, I think Elena Kagan is in her 40s. I forget if it's 49, maybe, but she's quite young. A woman, she would likely, you know, live for a great long time after her nomination to the court. And that is sometimes thought of as a way that, you know, presidents extend their power, extend their reach, is by doing something now, which will still be in effect 20, 30 or more years from today. Also, I believe she is Jewish, and that would be, you know, simply that something that would be noted. I think a majority of the justices on the court at this point are Catholic.
We have six Catholics on the court right now.
An interesting time of change, and so early in the Obama presidency, potentially more nominations as we go forward as well. All right, should we call it a day?
Sure, that was great.
Great. Thanks, Jessica.